The fact of Eleanor Roosevelt's closest woman friend during the White House years was erased, distorted, and demeaned for many years. Even photographs of intimate family dinners were cropped before publication to delete Hick.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world. Produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
From 1928 through 1933, Lorena Hickok was a star reporter for the Associated Press and the first woman to be assigned national stories. It was the AP stories of Lorena Hickok that introduced Eleanor Roosevelt as the new First Lady to the American public. Lorena Hickok and Eleanor Roosevelt were close friends for the rest of their lives. Eleanor Roosevelt died 4 years before Lorena Hickok, and on the day of Hickok's cremation in 1968, no one was present. Her ashes lay on a shelf for 20 years, and then were put into an unmarked grave in the cemetery of Rhinebeck, New York. Recently, a group of women scholars in the Hudson River Valley made the discovery of this forgotten woman and created a Lorena Hickok Memorial Fund and Scholarship. On the occasion of the program you're about to hear, Blanche Wiesen Cook, biographer of Eleanor Roosevelt, speaks at a memorial and luncheon to honor Lorena Hickok. She is introduced by actress Nan Brooks, who performs a one-woman show of Eleanor Roosevelt.
I'm sure that she will tell you some of the work that Lorena Alice Hickok did in the world and how important she is to all of us. And I would remind you all that, to use a phrase with which you are now familiar, we must never have another forgotten woman. I give you Blanche Wiesen Cook.
About a hard act to follow. Eleanor Roosevelt was a writer in the 1920s, and nobody had really dealt with her incredible writings, and nobody had dealt with her extraordinary career as First Lady, where she ran practically on some issues like housing, affordable, decent housing for all people, Arthur Dale. We were talking about Arthur Dale a few minutes ago. She ran practically a parallel administration. And her FBI file was one of the wonders of the 20th century. And I knew about her FBI file because at the time I was president of something called the Fund for Open Information and Accountability, which is FOIA, Inc. And we existed to keep the Freedom of Information Act alive. And at that time, this was in 1976, we had just had a great victory and won a case called the American Friends Service Committee versus Webster and prevented the FBI from destroying its field office files, prevented the FBI from destroying its files on individuals, its COINTELPRO files, the Martin Luther King files, and it turned out the Eleanor Roosevelt files, which I knew was over 3,000 pages, almost 4,000 pages. And so that was very interesting to me. When I started looking at her file after I considered doing this book, the very first entry in the file is 1924, because Eleanor Roosevelt was organizing with her great friend Esther Lape, L-A-P-E, and Eleanor Roosevelt just said, you know, find a lost woman and write about her. Well, if somebody wants to find a really wonderful lost woman to write about, Esther Lape, L-A-P-E, deserves a biography. She was Eleanor Roosevelt's great friend and mentor, and with her partner, Elizabeth Reed, who was Eleanor Roosevelt's own financial advisor and a major international lawyer, wrote a textbook of international law in the 20s that was used in every law school in the country. These are very powerful, important women. And in 1924, they organized something called the American Foundation to get the U.S. into the world court. And that's Eleanor Roosevelt's first entry in the FBI file. She tried to get the U.S. into the world court in 1924. It was an amazing story. And then Eleanor Roosevelt, in 1932, met Hick, Lorena Hickok, Lorena Alice Hickok. And Lorena Hickok is also very important to Eleanor Roosevelt for many, many reasons. So what I thought I would do is just read a little bit from the chapter in Volume 1 called The First Lady's First Friend. The fact of E.R.'s closest woman friend during the White House years was erased, distorted, and demeaned for many years. Even photographs of intimate family dinners were cropped before publication to delete Hick. When included, she was not identified. More recently, and I'm talking about books like that, when identified, she was framed by the most insulting stereotypes. And then I go into the stereotypes. In contrast to the stereotypes that have ridiculed her face and mocked her girth, Hick appealed to women and men. She may have acted and looked like one of the boys. She was, after all, the only woman in a very jealously guarded male environment. Because of her humor, her professionalism, and her warmth, her colleagues became her lifelong friends. She would have been very lonely, indeed, if she were not one of the boys. Instead, she was surrounded by people who enjoyed her company and seemed not to mind that for almost 20 years, she was frequently given the best stories to cover. With them, she smoked, played poker, and drank, mostly bourbon on the rocks. She frequented saloons, enjoyed coffee houses, and liked to entertain at home, to bake, and to cook. Hick was fun, smart, and generous. She told a good story. She loved to listen to a good story, and she was passionate about politics, sports, and music. She was a pro who played the game to succeed, and she understood the need for costumes. She preferred trousers, flannel shirts, high work boots, but she only wore them in the country. At other times, she dressed for the occasion, and she dressed well. For concerts and the opera, she painted her nails, wore dangling earrings, coiffed her hair, and applied makeup, especially bright red coral lipstick, which she wore most of the time. In the office, she rolled up her sleeves to type, but she usually wore bright silk scarves to set off her dress when she was out on assignment before that. On 7 March 1933, Hick's 40th birthday, E.R. wrote Hick a birthday letter. And she wrote, "Hick, darling, all day I've thought of you, and another birthday, I will be with you. And yet tonight you sounded so far away and formal. Oh, I want to put my arms around you. I ache to hold you close. Your ring is a great comfort. I look at it and think, she does love me, or I wouldn't be wearing it." And this is a very interesting ruby and diamond ring that Hick gave to Eleanor Roosevelt in 1932. And the great diva, Ernestine Schumann Hank, had given it to Hick. And it's a wonderful story. Hick and the divas are a fairly wonderful story, which is part of this chapter. E.R. had never felt loved in this way before. Hick made demands, more demands than E.R. was prepared to fulfill. Hick was jealous and willful, tempestuous and difficult, intensely emotional and expressive. With Hick, there was no reason to pine and long. That was a new experience for E.R. She was no longer the one left lonely. She was wanted and pursued. It was pleasant and yet frightening. Hick was exciting, rambunctious, uncontrollable. E.R. never knew what might happen next. Did she mind? Not really, at first. E.R.'s friends were always amazed that she never told Hick to speak more softly, behave more decorously. It never occurred to her. Esther Lape and her circle considered Hick a bit rough and tumble. Let me just say, many years ago, I interviewed a wonderful woman named Peggy Kiskaden. And Peggy Bach Kiskaden is was Derek Bach's mother, who was one of Esther Lape's great friends. And if you read my book, you'll get sort of all of the confusions of the extended Esther Lape circle. When Elizabeth Reed died, Peggy Kiskaden, who was then Peggy Bach, thought that she was going to live with Esther Lape. And instead, Esther Lape went off with Elizabeth Reed's woman physician. And Peggy Bach was very annoyed and hurt and left for California, where I met with her in her home in Beverly Hills. And I spent a weekend with her, and it was really an extraordinary weekend. She was an amazing woman, and she was 90 at the time, although she told me she was 70, which would have meant that she was 2 when Derek was born. But she was just marvelous. And it's very hard if you're, you know, an historian or a biographer to just sort of be blunt when you do interviews. And I really didn't know quite how to ask some of the questions I was really determined to ask. And we drank a lot during the course of this weekend, and I finally asked fairly directly what I thought was a fairly direct question. I started by asking her what her circle of really very privileged upper-class lesbians thought of Hick. And she was the one who said, "Oh, well, we thought she was very rough and tumble." And I asked if they liked her at all. And she said, "Well, you know, I don't think we liked her very well, but Eleanor Roosevelt liked her, and that was enough for us." And then I said, "Well, did you ever use the word lesbian?" And she looked at me and she said, "No, we never use the word lesbian." But that didn't mean we didn't know what we were doing. And that was the closest I ever got to a really direct, and I didn't ask any more questions.
Blanche Weazon Cook, biographer of Eleanor Roosevelt, speaks at a memorial and luncheon to honor Lorena Hickok.
I would like to read a few paragraphs from Volume 1 where I describe Hick. But I'd like to say, if it weren't for Hick, Eleanor Roosevelt might never have become the kind of journalist that we really are very fortunate she became, because she kept a daily running record of her life. And how she became the columnist Eleanor Roosevelt with a daily column is that she was writing 10, 15, 18 page letters to Hick, and Hick, the highest paid woman reporter for the Associated Press, said to Eleanor Roosevelt, "You know, you're writing the details of your life to me. The whole nation would like to know how you spend your days. Why don't you write a column?" And Eleanor Roosevelt agreed to do that in 1936. And from 1936 to the end of her life, 1962, she wrote the very famous daily column My Day. And Hick didn't just suggest the idea, Hick told her how to do it. Hick was a really great writer. It was no accident that her bylines were bigger. It was no accident that she was assigned the best stories for over 20 years. And she told Eleanor Roosevelt how to write a lead, and she told Eleanor Roosevelt what a good lead was. And I have to really respectfully disagree with Eleanor Roosevelt. Never be anybody's Hick. Because what happened was she stopped writing the stories that she was privy to. Her boss, the editor, said, get us a story. She said, no. Her editors said, well, you have access to all this inside information. And she had gotten, as Louis Howe, Eleanor Roosevelt's other great friend, who's FDR's great friend as well, the bridge between them in my book, said to Hick, you've just gotten too close to your news source. And Hick really felt very protective. And it was really at the time, you know, Eleanor Roosevelt's children were getting divorced, one after the other, within the first year of the White House. First the young Elliot, and then her daughter Anna. Instantly, well, Hick is there. She's living there, you know, on a regular basis. She saw what was going on and didn't want to report it. Everybody's asking her what went on, and she refused to report it. And the pressure, so it was a matter of protectiveness, ethics. I mean, she was protecting the First Lady. And finally, Eleanor Roosevelt said, since she became very tense and very sulky and very blustery, she said, you'd really feel better if you just quit the Associated Press. And Eleanor Roosevelt encouraged Hick to give up her career. Now, if you read Volume 2, you'll see the moral of this story is never give up your career for anybody you love. Women do it all the time. In my opinion, women should stop doing it. And I think Hick, and perhaps even Eleanor, would agree with me today. Never give up your career for anybody, for any woman or man you love. Having said that, who was Hick? I should also say, they had fun together. I think in the end, Hick probably thought it was worth it, maybe. But there were very hard times and very angry times. You see, there was an arc of love, and it dips very deeply after Hick resigns as a journalist. Let me just say one other thing about privacy. It was a whole lot easier then to be a protective reporter, even if she hadn't quit. Because, in fact, one of the stories that I tell is on the way to Yosemite in California, Eleanor Roosevelt and Hick were determined to have a private holiday. And the journalists were swarming their San Francisco hotel. And they leapt into their car and got involved in a very high-speed chase to get away from the reporters, a chase that today resonates in Princess Di's great tragedy. But at one point, they went over 80 miles an hour. Eleanor Roosevelt pulled off to the side of the road and said to this caravan of reporters following them, this is ridiculous. Let's go have breakfast at that diner we just passed, and you call your publishers and editors and go away. And the most amazing thing in today's terms is that they did call and they did go away. Moreover, they didn't write about the high-speed chase. And they knew who they were following, the First Lady and their colleague, the star reporter. Her first job after she quit was as head of the Federal Emergency Relief Administration's investigative reporter. You know, she went around the country to see how the New Deal was working and was the chief investigative person at FARA. And that's how she got Eleanor Roosevelt to Arthurdale. And I really hope you read about Arthurdale. It really is a model of what, in my opinion, we need out there. Not one single federal dollar has been invested in new housing starts since Ronald Reagan. And it was Hick. If it weren't for Hick, we never would have had Arthur Dale. So she did very important things. She worked as head of the Women's Committee of the Democratic Party for many years. And then she wrote books. She wrote about 5 books. She wrote a book about Eleanor Roosevelt, a book about Helen Keller, a book on women in politics called Women of Courage, and a book about Walter Reuther, a biography of Walter Reuther. I want to just tell one story about Eleanor Roosevelt and Hick that I think is very important, that was for me very important anyway. And I felt I really learned something about Eleanor Roosevelt. I became obsessed with sort of going everywhere Eleanor Roosevelt went and, you know, really, literally, unlike Hillary Clinton, walking in her shoes. No, I didn't mean to say that. We want Hillary Clinton to win. We want Hillary Clinton to walk in Eleanor Roosevelt's shoes. But one of the things that I tried to do with my partner, Claire Koss, was to go up to a lake called Lake Roosevelt, which is in the High Sierra. It's 11,000 feet up above the valley in Yosemite National Park. And most people thought for a very long time that Lake Roosevelt was named after Theodore Roosevelt. But when I discovered it was named after Eleanor Roosevelt, we really had to get there. And it turns out that she was there in 1934, and she fed the lake with trout and was really a bit of a hero in the Yosemite area. And Hick had gone halfway up with Eleanor Roosevelt and the Rangers and stayed around a lake called Young Lake. Well, even halfway up, there's just no air there. When Eleanor Roosevelt got up there, even to Young Lake, which is several thousand feet below Lake Roosevelt, she wrote her daughter about how Hick, who was overweight and smoked too much, really shouldn't take these big trips. She was very uncomfortable. And that was my first real inkling that Eleanor Roosevelt's level of competitiveness was really intense. Because anybody would wheeze a lot up there. You didn't have to smoke 3 packs a day to wheeze a lot. And I really started to look for the answer, which to me had been a great mystery. Eleanor Roosevelt wrote the last years of her life in a book called You Learn by Living, that the happiest day of her life was the day that she made the first team at field hockey away in school in England. Well, I've always been fascinated about that. I mean, it's the happiest day of her life. She did everything. She knew everybody. She had many struggles. Why? And I really think I understand Eleanor Roosevelt a little bit. And that is, she really liked the knockabout field of sports. And her field of choice was politics. And she hated to lose. She always advised her friends, if you have to compromise, be sure to compromise up. And she always said courage could be as contagious as fear. She also said, never go anywhere without a gang. Never go anywhere without a gang. She said, governments exist for only one purpose, to make things better for all people. But you can't depend on politicians to do anything about that. You have to go door to door, block by block, community by community, and put pressure on those people to take your needs and your wants seriously. And Hick was very important to the kind of gangs Eleanor Roosevelt forged. Press conferences for women journalists only. And Eleanor Roosevelt was very competitive. Let me just weave that back in. And one example of that was when Hick suggested she do press conferences for women journalists only. Eleanor Roosevelt wrote her after the first one and said it was very successful. She would go on with it. And the best news was that she even beat Franklin. His press conference wasn't until the next week. As First Lady, Eleanor Roosevelt set herself the task of earning as much as FDR earned as president. Talk about competitive. Now, this is very interesting because he earned $75,000 a year in the 1930s. You multiply by a factor of 10, and you get a 1990s dollar. That's a lot of money. And up at Lake Roosevelt, competition is a piece of it. Not for Hick, but for Eleanor Roosevelt. It wasn't I win, you lose, but Eleanor Roosevelt really wanted to win. She's the only first lady to leap for her pen to criticize her husband. And if you read volume 2, you see some important ways where that happened. And for Hick, who was a very great and good friend, a very loyal and true friend, why I brought the yellow roses is that when she went the day Eleanor Roosevelt was buried with your father, Gordon Kidd, and at midnight, was it at midnight?
Yeah.
She brought yellow roses. And I learned that this week from Eleanor Roosevelt Seagraves, her granddaughter, because Hick said that was her favorite flower. And I think it was Hick's favorite flower. And she always said she wanted lots of fire in her Beethoven and thunder in her Wagner. And we had this great storm out in the cemetery. And I know I don't want to encourage any woman in this room to be anybody's Hick. But I think that in the end, she would have thought it was all worthwhile. In the end, we lost a great reporter. In the end, we have a great legacy to contemplate, loyalty, devotion, friendship, love. Thank you very much.
Blanche Weason Cook, biographer of Eleanor Roosevelt, speaks at a memorial and luncheon to honor Lorena Hickok.
The moral of this story is never give up your career for anybody you love.
For more information about the Lorena Hickok Memorial and Scholarship Fund, created to support a scholarship for young women journalists, write to the email address at gr8dame@msn.com. That's gr8dame@msn.com. An archive of Lorena Hickok's correspondence can be found at the FDR Library in Hyde Park, New York. Special thanks to the New York Humanities Council. For Wings, I'm Ginger Miles.
Wings releases a new program every week by and about women around the world. We do this with funds from your local radio station and gifts and grants from people who wish to keep women's voices in the news. To find out more about Wings and perhaps add us to your annual giving, you can email wings@wings.org or write to Wings at P.O. Box 33220, Austin, Texas, 78764, USA. Thank you again to Suzette Cullen and to Genevieve Vaughn, author of the book Forgiving, a Feminist Criticism of Exchange. Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.